Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on ancient man when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution, Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Now, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coin. And in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our country, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that we teach in our Mosaic Law School. We conduct that school twice a year here at the law school in Isabella, Missouri, and we also have it on compact disc for home education. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there in the privacy of your own home. All right, we've been talking about ancient man. Last time I introduced you to the concept of ancient maps. These maps have been copied and recopied and recopied for thousands of years. Now, back in the 1500s, a bunch of these maps surfaced. And they have been copied and recopied. Some of these are the actual originals from the Middle Ages. And they were analyzed by the United States Navy back in 1956, and they were struck by the accuracy of these maps. And I reported that to you in the last program. Now, the last thing we were talking about were the dates. Now, you know, when we go to public school, we get these dates, you know, millions and millions of years ago. Now, from the biblical report, let me give you the correct dates. And the correct dates from the beginning of time, this is when the universe was created. All the stars that you see out there being photographed by Hubble, you know, that go out there 12 billion light years. Well, there's a report that comes from the creator of all those billions of stars. And he says that he made the whole thing about 6,000 years ago. In fact, biblical chronology will take us back 6,034 years. So you might want to write that number down. Last time when we stopped, we were talking about some numbers here, and I gave you some numbers. So if you want to know how much time has elapsed from Adam to today, based upon Usher and Pannon's chronology taken from the scripture, there's a little bit of disagreement as to some specific dates, you know, maybe a few years here and there, but it's a hell of a lot more accurate than millions and millions of years. I mean, hell, these guys, they can't come up with a date closer, you know, than a million years. That's a long period of time. God can come up to a date here that's within, you know, your lifetime. 6,034 years is the elapsed time. Now, let's run down the list again. I told you zero is Adam and creation date. If you want to know when the flood occurred, it occurred in 1656 after Adam. And that corresponds to, counting back from where we are today, to 2369 BC. So the flood occurred in 2369. So next time when you're looking at all these numbers, you know, that are being put out here by archaeology, thousands and thousands of years ago and down in this strata or that strata, what they're looking at are the remains of ancient civilizations that were buried in a worldwide flood. 2369 BC is the flood. Now, about 2000 BC is Abraham. 1700 BC, we come to Jacob, who went to Egypt in the famine and in the time of Joseph. That's about 1700 BC, if you remember that story from Sunday school. 1600 BC, the Great Pyramid is built. 1300 BC, Moses comes on the scene, leads the Israelites out of Egypt. About 1000 BC, that takes us down to David and Solomon. And then, about 536 BC, we have the destruction of Jerusalem by Nebuchadnezzar. That's about the time of Daniel. So if you're, you know, you're just going through the scriptures and you're looking at a book like the Book of Daniel, that's about 536 BC. That's when Daniel went into captivity and went up to Babylon. And then we come on down to the Messiah. He was born about 4 BC. 4 BC, that's pretty close to it. Some people say 3, you know. 4 BC. He wasn't born at 0. He was born about 4 years before 0. And then we come into the modern era, and this is called AD, Anno Domini. BC, that's before Christ, or BCE. You'll see a lot of dates now. They don't want to mention Christ, so they put 4 BCE, before the common era. I'll give you a little place to hang these dates on. Now, in the 1500s AD, this takes us into the Middle Ages. Keeping in mind, you know, that Columbus discovered America about 1500. Now, remember, when Columbus discovered America, they had cannons on their ships. They had metallurgy. They had some knowledge of metals. And they were making swords, and they were starting to make small firearms. They had cannons. And these cannons were being cast. They would melt the iron, and they would cast cannon in sand. They made sand molds and cast the cannon in sand molds. Metallurgy as we know it today, that is the combining of various elements, you know, like manganese and tungsten and things like that with iron to make steel, was totally unknown in Columbus's day. All right, now keep that one in mind, because 500 years ago, just 500 years ago, men were casting cannon in sand, and today we're flying, well, they tell us we're flying to the moon. All right. Now, let's go back here in biblical times. Remember, from the Garden of Eden forward, 1656 years. Listen to this statement here in Scripture. It says, this is Genesis 4, verse 22, and Zillah, she also bare Tubal-Cain, an instructor of every artificer in brass and iron. Before Noah's flood, there was a fellow by the name of Tubal-Cain who was an instructor of every artificer of brass and iron. Now, this is an interesting scripture because out of the pyramids, archaeologists have come up with artifacts that are made with metallurgy. That's the science of being able to combine metals to make some new process or some new product. Like when you take copper, and I think you mix it with tin, I'm not positive, and you come up with a thing called brass. You know, brass is made with copper and some other elements, some other metals, to come up with a metal that we call brass. Steel is iron, which is mixed with other metals to make, you know, to make steel. You use iron and some other things. That's called metallurgy. This metallurgy was unknown in Columbus's time, as we know it today. Now, in ancient times, they had advanced metallurgy. They were making steel. You know, we have the Iron Age. They tell us about the Iron Age. They talk about the Stone Age, the Copper Age, the Iron Age. Hell, they dug up a blast furnace that they were putting oxygen into to make steel in southern Israel. They discovered that. It's down by the port of Aqaba. Now, hey, listen, guys. The stories that we're getting from our college and our high school textbooks about man being real dumb in the past and getting real smart now in the present is false. Man started off with an invention. This is God. Now, he starts off with an invention called man in the Garden of Eden, and man was very smart, very well instructed. Artificers and brass and iron. They developed a very advanced technological society before the flood. And God took a look at it, and he said, you know, this thing ain't going to fly very long, so I'm going to destroy this, and he did. And then after the flood, there was a resurgence of technology that lasted for about 1,000 years, from 2300 to about the time of Moses. And then it was destroyed again. And the primary destruction occurred within about the first 400 years, about the time of Peleg. Now, that's quite a little story of and by itself. So I'm going to take you back, now that you got a little handle on this time frame over here from the Bible. Now let's take a look at what we actually find out here. And let's see if we can wrap our heads around this. Remember, we were talking about ancient maps. That's what this chapter 3 is all about. It's about these ancient maps. Now, these ancient people, before Noah's flood, before the Ice Age, before Antarctica was covered in ice, was mapped. And when Noah came through the flood, he brought those maps with him. And those maps have been copied in ancient times. And they have survived in places like Turkey and in Armenia. And they came down to the Renaissance Age. They were discovered in France and Italy and in the 1500s. And people wrote them down, but they didn't know what they had. I mentioned that to you in the last program. You know, you dig a battery up back in the 1750s or 60s in Egypt, and you put it in the British Museum. But you see, until batteries were invented, you know, about the 1850s or 60s, Nobody knew what the hell they had when they dug those artifacts out of the pyramids. It wasn't until about the 1930s that somebody was poking around in the British Museum and said, oh my God, this is a battery. A battery from ancient Egypt? Well, and it tells us they had electricity. When you go down to Peru, you find skeletons down there that have holes bored in their heads. Now, when you bore a hole in the skull of a living man, we call that brain surgery today. And they're doing this brain surgery in modern times, but they were doing it in ancient times. We know that because the round holes have healed over. So the brain surgery, whatever they were digging around, you know, when you take a human being and you bore a hole through his skull into his brain cavity, there has to be some reason for doing that, isn't there? Well, just think about it. When was the last time you took your wife into the kitchen and bored a hole into her brain? You know, that's not done very often, and it's not very common. It does occur, rarely, in hospitals, under very stringent conditions, and it's a very serious matter. You know, you get to dicking around, you know, with your brain, you know, drilling holes into your head, you know, you could hurt somebody. Now, those have been dug up. There's probably 10 or 15 examples of this brain surgery being done in ancient times. Now, that's not being done by cavemen and Neanderthals now, do you think? So when we have a skull and it's got a hole drilled in it that has healed over, you know that the brain surgery was successful. Well, whether they were working on your brain or not, they were drilling holes through skulls. And today we call that brain surgery. And those people survived that. So they must have had a technology. They must have had a reason, first of all, for boring the hole in there. And then secondly, they must have had a technology that was successful enough that these people survived it. All right. Now, you don't find thousands of them, but you find a few. Now, you know, if we went forward 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years, you're not going to find millions of people, millions of skulls that have holes drilled in them, but you'll find a few that were done in the 1990s and the early 21st century. That does go on today. And it went on in the past. And when it went on in the past, it demonstrates that some people in the past, whether they were contemporaneous with Cro-Magnon, man, and Neanderthal, we don't know. But listen, at some time in the past, there were people that were blowing up nuclear weapons and drilling holes in people's heads. Now, they were also making maps, accurate maps of the world. And they didn't believe the world was flat either, because they had spherical maps with latitude and longitude, which we didn't have in Columbus's day. Just 500 years ago, we didn't have that technology. Now, here are maps that are demonstrating that technology that were made before Columbus. Now, what's that tell you? You know, come on, boys and girls, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. These maps are a scientific achievement that far surpassed the abilities of the navigators and map makers of the Renaissance and the Middle Ages and the Arab world, or of any ancient geographers. They are the product of an unknown people, antedating recognized history today. Now, here's a very exciting map copied in 1559. It's called the Haji Ahmed map, and it shows Antarctica and the Pacific coast of the United States of America with extreme accuracy. And it also depicts the land bridge that once existed between Siberia and Alaska. The Andrea Benescasa map of 1508 indicates that northern Europe was being covered by the Ice Age glaciation in its furthest advance. Here is the Ehudi Ben Zanzera map of 1487. Notice these remnants of the glaciers in Britain and the detailed profiles of islands in the Mediterranean and in the Aegean Seas. Now, those islands are still there, but now they're underwater. All right, now here are maps that depict islands that are underwater. We wouldn't know that those islands were there, or that ancient man knew that they were there, unless we had these ancient maps. Now, with this ancient map, picture this. In the antediluvian world before Noah's flood, and in the period of time after Noah's flood, between 2368 BC and about 2000 BC, these islands, like Great Britain, were not covered by ice. They were in the process of being inundated by ice, but they weren't covered yet. These islands were still above sea level. Today they're below sea level. And we have the maps today of those ancient times, and now we can go back and we can look at those islands and say, well, yeah, they're there. Furthermore, off Bimini now is the city that's under 65 feet of water today, which shows you that at one time that piece of real estate was above sea level, a city was built, and it sunk below sea level. It was covered. Now, the Hemi King chart of 1502 indicates northern Siberian rivers emptying into the Arctic Ocean, but which are all under ice today. And it also shows glacial actions in the Baltic countries. What are today huge islands in Southeast Asia are shown on this map joined to land, which they once were. And you know what? The map even shows an ancient Suez Canal. Before the modern Suez Canal was built back in the 1860s, there was a canal that joined the Red Sea with the Mediterranean Sea. Now, we know that from the ancient beds that are there today. Now, there are actual maps of that. Now, did you hear that when you went to college? Did anybody explain to you how ancient man had technologies greater than today. Greater than today. Not just equal with today. I mean, they were doing things then that were unable to duplicate to this moment in time. Now we'll get into that as we progress along. Ptolemy's map of the north depicts a glacial sheet advancing across south-central Greenland, and at the same time it shows glaciers retreating from northern Germany and southern Sweden. Do you see? All this could only have come from the findings of surveying parties that tracked the areas before, during, and after the Ice Age. During the Ice Age, according to the evolutionary theory, humans were grunting savages. The Galorian's map of 1510 shows not only the exact line of the Atlantic coast of America from Canada to Tierra del Fuego, but it also shows the whole length of the Pacific coast. Now, this is in 1510. People had made it over here. Remember, Columbus got over here first in 1492. By 1510, a map was reproduced from ancient sources. When Columbus set sail for the New World, he could have well had at his disposal maps of this piece of real estate. It was knowledge that had been lost, and now Columbus had rediscovered it. I've mentioned this before, you know, we like to give Columbus credit for discovering America. Boys and girls, when Columbus got here to the Americas, there were already people here. So it's pretty obvious that he was not the first guy to discover America, because the people that were already here had already discovered it, hadn't they? Now, it's true that the Spaniards and the Italians didn't know it was here, and they discovered it, but they're only a small part, you know, of the world's population. Hell, over here at that time, there were an estimated 16 million people living here in North and South America when Columbus got here. 16 million. Not 60 now, but 16 million people. Now, that's quite a little bunch of people. And we didn't reach a population of 16 million here in the United States until around the 1830s. All right, going on. The King James map, World Chart of 1502, shows the Sahara Desert as a fertile land with large lakes, rivers, and cities, which at a remote period it was. Then there's the Dulcert map of 1339, traced from Ireland to the Don River of Eastern Europe. And I tell you, this map shows precision beyond understanding. Now, here's the key to this. We didn't understand the precision of this map-making techniques that were being copied and passed down from generation to generation over thousands of years until 1956. It reminds me of the Great Pyramid. Let me tell you a little story. I'm going to school. Mr. Shalinas comes in. You know, this is 10th grade high school. Mr. Shalinas comes in, and we're studying ancient Egypt. This is ancient history. You know, we're talking about Egypt. And, of course, the number one topic when we talk about Egypt is the Great Pyramid. And so the Great Pyramid sits on about 13, 14 acres, pretty close to 14 acres. And in 1964, now when I'm going to school, boys and girls, when I'm going to school, this is before 1964. But in 1964, there was a development called the laser transit. Laser transit. And they were able to measure the Great Pyramid with some precision. And they discovered that it was square on its four corners to within plus or minus 1/2 inch. Furthermore, it's level to plus or minus 1/2 inch. That's phenomenal. We're able to achieve those kinds of tolerances with buildings of that size, with things like the Trade Towers and the Empire State Building today. That's pretty good. Now listen, my textbook told me back about 1953 that the way they built the Great Pyramid was they sewed a bunch of goat guts together, made themselves a water level, and they used this primitive method called a water level made with sewn goat gut to level that thing up. Now, they weren't able to determine how level it was or how square it was until 1964, but they built it. They built it with goat guts. Now, even when I was a youngster and I heard that story, we didn't know how level or how square it was, but I looked at the size of that building and I said, oh, I just find that really hard to believe. Now, I probably was, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, 16 maybe. And I said, that's just really hard to believe. But when I actually saw the measurements years and years later, you know, as an adult, and how they couldn't measure it until 1964 with a laser transit, I said, you know, now I know they were lying to me in 1953 or 4. And these lies go on. And I say lies not because the archaeologists are ignorant and they're spreading the best information that they have available. No. These people have the information. Boys and girls, the people who discovered those 25 sites with the green glass produced by nuclear explosions, hell, they're the ones that discovered it, and they're hiding it. I was up at the Museum of Natural History in Chicago, and I asked my wife, who's from Illinois, I said, now you've been in this museum before. Do you ever remember seeing a picture, or do you remember seeing any artifacts in here? This is the Museum of Natural History in Chicago. In 1940, they had a 14-foot human skeleton in there. And I saw this picture of this human skeleton in that museum, which was taken, I don't remember where I saw it now, it could have been National Geographic or some publication. And I was amazed because, you know, you heard the story of David and Goliath, remember when you went to Sunday school? Now, they tell us today that giants, you know, that's something that never occurred in the past. How much do you read about giants in the past? The Bible talks about giants commonly. In fact, Moses wrote about one, a guy by the name of Og, whose bed was 14 feet long. And this guy had a 14-foot bed. So I'm presuming the guy was 13 feet tall. I mean, that's a pretty good-sized boy. Now, you don't hear that today, but it doesn't fit the theory of evolution, where men are small and getting bigger. And here the Bible's telling you, no, man was big and he has degenerated. Man was big and he's degenerated. That's the story from the Bible. Now, the story from politics and the story from archaeology is that man was dumb, and he was small, and he's getting bigger and smarter. And the Bible tells you, no, he was bigger and smarter, and he's getting smaller and dumber. And there's been a renaissance over the past 200 years of this knowledge. And there's a prophecy in Daniel chapter 12, and God said, and in the end times, knowledge shall be increased. Travel would be increased. We're living in that period of time. But from about 2000 BC until about 1800 AD, we lived through a pretty dumb period. We were getting dumbed down. Now, Corduroy grew excited, and I say, he said, this is the group now. They're over in the hotel in Hong Kong, I remember. Corduroy grew excited. He said, I say, if ever there were a treasure map, this is it. Just crammed with priceless gems. It tells the story of ancient coastlines, as well as the surprising exploits of our ancestors 5,000 years ago. Perry Reese stated that his copy was a composite form from 20 ancient maps. So let's explore it. So I took a pad and I noted the following features. South America and Africa in correct relative longitude and latitude. Not only were the Caribbean, Spanish, African, and South American coasts in correct positions relative to each other, but even isolated land areas like Cape Verde Islands, the Azores, and the Canary Islands, as well as topographies of the interiors, mountain ranges, peaks, rivers, plateaus, all were accurately positioned by longitude and latitude. That is startling. Startling. You've got a map here that dates back to 1503. And, no, 1513. It's called the Perry Reese map. It's 1513. And that map maps South America, Africa, and puts them in their correct relative longitude and latitude, puts in the Caribbean, Spanish, African, and South American coasts in correct positions relative to each other. Then it even isolates the land areas like Cape Verde Islands, the Azores, and the Canary Islands, as well as the topographies of the interiors of these islands and these mountain ranges and peaks and their rivers and plateaus, and they're all accurately positioned, and we weren't able to determine that until 1956. Hey, kids, there's something to this, and there's something being kept from us. Don't you think? Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, in the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org or georgegordon.com. Click on to the archives page and download it yourself. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, and they're mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about ancient man, and I'm taking some excerpts from the book Dead Men's Secrets, written by Jonathan Gray. You can pick up a copy, I'm sure, at your local bookstore, used bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, copyright 2005 by Tech Services, or Teach, T-E-A-C-H, Teach Services Incorporated, and Jonathan Gray, all rights reserved. Teach Services Incorporated. You can go to www.teachservices.com. TEACHSERVICES.com. All right. We're talking about maps and map making. These are surprising, indeed even shocking discoveries. The crazy part of it is, hell, they've been around for hundreds of years. Archaeologists know this. And if they don't know it, then they're incompetent archaeologists. So when archaeologists know this and then they deliberately hide and suppress it, and then when they write their books and sell them to the public schools and teach us, that's you and me, about millions of years ago and men being discovered and they were living in caves and they were called Neanderthals and they got smarter and smarter as time went by and now, lo and behold, look what we've got today. That's a lie. And I said that before the break. And the reason that it's a lie is because they all know better. That's the crazy part. You know, you're a plumber and I'm a plumber, and our excuse is we believe them because that's what they taught us in public school. But hey, listen, that isn't the way it really came down. Now, the Bible is very accurate in its history, very accurate in its science. The Bible is a history book. The Bible is a science book. And the science recorded in the Scripture has been there for thousands of years, and it's never been revised. And the science in the Scripture is just as true, accurate, and correct today as it was when it was written there thousands of years ago. There are no science textbooks today 100 years old. None. Zero. Zilch. The science of today will be the laughingstock of tomorrow. Today we look at our science books that we were reading from in 1900 and we laugh and we smirk and we say, God, that was really old-timey, wasn't it? But in the Bible, the atomic theory was set out plainly. And it was just as true, accurate, and correct when it was written 2,000 years ago as it is today. And the Bible didn't need to be rewritten to cover the new advances in scientific technology and physics. And the Bible's history doesn't need to be rewritten. It was true, accurate, and correct when it was set down. And what we're discovering is the history of the Bible has been lied about and perverted. And we've been lied to. That's the story that I'm delivering to you this week. Now here's number two. The coastline of Queen Maud Land in Antarctica. The islands and the bays of the depicted coastlines are the same as they appear below the Antarctic ice sheet, as recently revealed by seismic echo soundings. Pause. Let me pause there for a moment. Today, Antarctica is covered by ice. It's got ice in some places a mile or two thick. In order for you to map Antarctica today, you've got to take these echo soundings. Now, here are maps that we are making today of Antarctica with the most sophisticated technologies that you can imagine. Well, sophisticated technologies to us today in 2000, and we're able to do what these people have already done and had copies of these maps back in 1500. And you're sitting there telling me that the archaeologists of today, they're just ignorant and they just don't know. Huh? They ain't heard of this yet. What a crock of crap. They not only know it, they are the ones that are suppressing it. It is true, the information's there, but it's not being publicized. And what they are publicizing are lies about Cro-Magnon man and Neanderthal man and, hey, we were real dumb and now we're getting real smart. Those are the lies. And they know that's not true. And they know it's not true because of this information here. Now, this fella, Gray, you know, this is Jonathan Gray, he has compiled literally hundreds of these stories. I'm just reading you this one little piece of the story, chapter 3 on maps. And I told you in the last program, I said, listen to this. He's got chapters in here on geography, astronomy, cosmology, mathematics, metallurgy, large-scale construction, construction technique, social information, engineering, mechanical devices, everyday items, clothing, art, medicine, electricity, flight, space travel, ancient science, weaponry, and civilization. And guess who discovered all of that? The archaeologists. Then after they discover it, and they write up their PhDs and their master's dissertations, then they go bury that stuff real deep so that none of the rest of us ever get a chance to see that. And then they come out here and they write us, you know, these neat books about how we evolved from green algae and how we're getting real smart now and how, you know, populations in the past were real small, but today they're getting real big. Boys and girls, their populations in the past of billions of people lived on this planet, lived and died right here. Now, we know that, but you've got to dig it out, and unless you're out here actually digging, you're not going to find it. Now, Gray is one of these historical revisionists. The guy, you know, he's an oddball, no doubt about it. He goes out and discovers this, digs it out, and says, hey, let me publish a book. Let me put this thing together. Let me tell you about these ancient maps that the archaeologists all know about, historians know about, but they're not telling you because, see, it doesn't fit with the evolutionary theory. It fits perfectly with biblical creation. Boy, we're not going to teach you a word about that. Not a word. Well, I'm not here to persuade you that I'm right. I just wanted to tell you that there's another body of information out there that you haven't seen yet, and then somebody is jerking your chain. That's what the bottom line is. They're jerking your chain. So here's the coastline of Queen Maud Land in Antarctica. We couldn't find it except by echo and seismic echo soundings. It's pictures in great detail. Our region scarcely explored today, including a mountain range that remained undiscovered until 1952. So as recently as 1952, we didn't know about this mountain range, but it had already been written up in 1513. Interestingly, the map shows two bays where the modern seismic map showed lands. However, when the experts were asked to check their measurements, they found that the ancient map was correct and the modern maps were wrong. Now, how do you like that? So here's the guys that go down there and they're making up these maps and they say, well, here's the way we think this thing is. And they compare that with the ancient maps and they find out that, well, these ancient maps now say that this is thus and so, and we say it such and such. And so they go back and check it and they find out that the ancient maps are correct and, hey, we got that wrong. How do you like that? Well, now that's fine. We do that all the time. In fact, map makers today, cartographers they call them, they're going around the world and they're always updating the maps. You know, maps that were made back when I was a kid showed that Mount Everest was 29,002 feet. I saw one the other day and they got Mount Everest at 29,035 feet. Now, either in 1952, when Edmund Hillary first, you know, climbed to the top of it, got his numbers wrong, you know, as he was climbing to the top of the mountain, he thought it was 29,000 and 2 feet. And come to find out, today, it's 29,035 feet. Well, what's going on here is that we're getting a little more accurate as time goes on. You know, we've got satellites out there now which are a little more accurate than the old transits, you know, the guy tramping through the woods. Aerial photographs, you know, give us a more accurate presentation. And so as time progresses along, things get a little bit more accurate. That isn't to say that in 1952 people were dragging their knuckles on the ground. You know, I was alive in 1952, and I can tell you, no, we're getting along quite nicely. You know, we still had electricity and we had indoor plumbing. But the moral of the story is when we go back here and we look at the accuracy of these accurate maps that were drawn up in the 1500s of Antarctica, which, well, we didn't even know about until 1819, that tells you that those people that drew those maps up in ancient times before the ice sheets were there, these maps are drawn without the ice sheets, then that tells us that ancient man was at least as smart as cartographers today. Now when we find out that cartographers of today make mistakes that the ancient maps had correct, that tells us that they were better map makers then than we are today. We're they sure as hell were as good as, if not better than. However, when the experts were asked to check their measurements, they found that the ancient map was correct after all. One thing was crystal clear. Either somebody had mapped Antarctica before the ice cap covered the continent, or else the ice-covered continent was mapped with very sophisticated instruments. Now, which would you prefer? That at some time in the indefinite past, it had ice on it, and they went down and they mapped it with sophisticated instruments that we have today, or else they mapped it at a time before the ice sheets were there. The Isle of Pines, Andros Island, San Salvador, Jamaica, the mouth of the Amazon, and the island of Morejo, they were all correctly shaped and perfectly located in latitude and longitude. A major error appeared to be Greenland, shown as three islands. This is number four now. Here's an ancient map, and it depicts Greenland as three separate islands, and they thought that was a mistake. But during the International Geophysical Year, it was proved that this correctly represented the state of affairs in 3000 BC. Every mountain range in northern Canada and Alaska was recorded on this ancient map, including some ranges which the U.S. Army map services did not have on their maps, but the U.S. Army has since found them. Then the ancient source maps were drawn using a circular grid based on spherical trigonometry. Now, spherical trigonometry, boys and girls, is advanced math. That's something more than we would expect from Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, isn't it? Going on, these ancient source maps were drawn using a circular grid based upon spherical trigonometry with the focal point situated in Egypt. The copyist, Perry Reese, unfamiliar with circular projection, shifted and spliced the original grid to compensate for the curvature. Any modern spheroid projection on a flat surface would cause the same distortion. Notice this in the accompanying comparison between the Perry Reese and a modern map. So Corduroy pressed the point. Was this not compelling proof of the map's validity? Clearly, it came from an advanced ancient technology, and its grid system is similar to air navigation maps today. Even so, we cannot know how many times it was imperfectly copied. Now listen to this, said Corduroy. The Perry Reese map projection was based on an overestimate of 4.5 degrees in the circumference of the Earth. Now only one geographer in the ancient world had made that overestimation. It was the Greek cartographer and geographer Eratosthenes. When the Perry Reese map is redrawn to correct the Eratosthenes error, all existing longitude errors on the map are thereby reduced to zero. This can only mean one thing. Can you say it? The Greeks who mapped according to Eratosthenes' circumference had before them source maps which had been drawn without that error. So, the geographical knowledge on which the Perry Reese map is based ultimately originated not with the Greeks, but with an earlier people. So who were these earlier people that the Greeks were copying their maps? Who was it that possessed a more advanced science of map making than the Greeks? Well, that's brilliant, exclaimed Perch, and couldn't do it better myself. So what you're saying then is that while Greece and Rome were developing new civilizations, the vestiges of an older civilization, seemingly worldwide in scope, was vanishing. It left these maps behind, which were partly incomprehensible, so later cartographers altered them. Yeah, I can see that. And there's just one more thing, said Corduroy. The evidence indicates that what we have seen here is only a part of an original world map. And he paused. So here it was, evidence of science in an early epoch, which is considered to have none. And here were physical fragments of the amazing knowledge of a superculture which has now long vanished. We spread out 6 pieces of the jigsaw, facts which are now apparent concerning those early explorers. First, they possessed a knowledge of cartography comparable to our own today. Two, they knew the correct shape and they knew the size of the Earth. Three, they used spherical trigonometry in their mathematical measurements. Four, they utilized ultramodern methods of projection, such as exact coordinates. And five, they must have had at their disposal advanced geodetic instruments and trained specialists to use them, to measure longitude and latitude, which was totally lost and not even developed in the modern world until the end of the 18th century. And six, they must have been organized and directed on a global scale. The picture falling into place is this. Almost 5,000 years ago, somebody undertook a survey of the whole planet. The technology at their disposal was very sophisticated. Breakfast next morning was in a small restaurant off Nathan Road, rice congee and fried pastries. Wadjman had uncovered some little-known data which quite shocked all of us. Back in our room, he elaborated. Did you know that thousands of years ago, people in India knew faraway England as the island of the White Cliffs? Their Vishnu Purana reveals a close acquaintance with Europe. The geographical contours of the Americas and the North Polar Zone are also described in detail in this Indian document. Now that interests me, Jacob, and all eyes turn to Denise Tagg. My family was Irish, so I've had a penchant for the most ancient of Irish legends. And you want to know? They agree. And they say that Ireland was visited by men from India, the Dravidians, who came not as invaders but as surveyors. Wadjman nodded and said the Maya of Guatemala divided a spherical earth into 5 major continents, Africa, Europe, Asia, North and South America, and Australia. And in 2nd century Greece, Flavius Philostratus wrote, if the land be considered in relation to the entire mass of water, we can show that the earth is the lesser of the two. Now I ask you, how could the ancients have known this if they had not traversed and measured the earth's surface? It's true, 2/3 of the Earth's surface is water and 1/3 is land, but how could any man have known that without having measured it first? Admittedly, you have a point there, observed Heron. Of course, the earliest Egyptians were knowledgeable about land measurements also, and they practiced sophisticated surveying techniques. In fact, the ancient Egyptians understood enough to influence many other nations in locating important cities and temples on meridians, all based on simple fractions of the Earth's dimensions. And it seems to me that this independent testimony from different races does back up Phil's evidence from the maps. Perch smoothed his mustache. Over breakfast, Jacob, you spoke of an ancient Chinese book. That I did, Charlie, and I find it very astonishing. I'm referring to the fourth book of the Shan He King, entitled The Classic of Eastern Mountains, and it dates from 2250 BC. And in it, there are four sections describing mountains located beyond the Eastern Sea, on the other side of the Pacific Ocean, and each section begins by describing the geological features of a particular mountain, such as its height, its shape, its mineral deposits, and surrounding rivers and types of flora. Then it points the direction and distance to the next mountain, and so on. It's like a road map. By following the clues, we have found that these sections describe in detail the topography of Western and Central North America. Now let me just put an arrow right here, and we'll pause here and come back there next time. But up on the Columbia River, they discovered a skeleton. The skeleton was not an Indian skeleton, although it was found up on what was a reservation along the Columbia River. But it was a European man, and they dated him back to 13,000 BC. 13,000. Now that's a fictitious number, but here's the point. After it was discovered, they buried it. The Indians complained about it, and they took this obviously non-Indian skeleton. Because you see, boys and girls, it doesn't fit with the archaeological story that we've already written up. There weren't any Europeans in North America. Excuse me, boys and girls, but here are the Chinese. And they've got maps in China, written back as far as 2250 BC with an accurate topography of the Western United States. Well, then where did they get that? Did they come over and measure it themselves, or did somebody over here take it over to China? Mull that one over, and we'll take that up next time. Meanwhile, you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, that's it. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. Hey, I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.